Everyone dreams about living an uncommon life, but how we define that dream is very different for each of us. And for most, it's a lifelong pursuit. Welcome to the Uncommon Life Project podcast. We're going to introduce you to people who are living that life or enjoying the journey to get there. We're going to also give you some tools, tricks, and tips for starting or accelerating your own efforts to live an uncommon life, a life worth celebrating and savoring. Please welcome your hosts, Brian Dewhurst and Philip Ramsey.
Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Uncommon Life Project, where I am your host, Philip Ramsey.
I am Brian Dewhurst.
Thanks for tuning in.
Your voice sounded a little different there on the
intro. Well, it could have been a little radio voice. I don't know.
You get it too.
Thanks for tuning in. We're grateful that you took time to listen to this. This is just going to be Brian and I talking about inflation, talking about the economy.
You may fall asleep. Try to keep this brief.
Keep saying your words. So Brian obviously is probably going to take point on this. Let's just be really honest. But if I feel like there's some place where we can maybe talk a little bit more, or I actually get intrigued, we'll dive into it. Again, man, inflation's real. I'll just say that.
It's the big buzzword. We wanted to address it and talk about it directly.
I appreciate that. Because if people aren't, we got a problem. So we always want to be those people that address it. So where do we start?
Well, I want to start with inflation in the sense of where does it actually come from? Because what you see on TV, people are paying for it to be there. Like, there is a narrative that is being concocted right now. And I'm not going to point fingers at our president, but I'm going to point a finger at our president. Inflation is not coming from Putin. And that is a lie. So I want to dispel that. And like, that is not where inflation is coming from. It may be a factor, but it's not the source.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's a contributing factor, but it's not the, you know, if there's a pie chart of what percentage of inflation is coming from Putin and what percentage
it's
is coming from.
It's not the blaring big one that you want.
Yeah. It's not 100% Putin. Yeah. As much as I love it to be that, because I think he's in the wrong over there, but you know, whatever. Right. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Inflation comes from the money supply, period. The way our monetary system is designed is inflationary, period.
Okay.
That's it.
Why? Why is it?
So I think Bitcoin is a great thing to juxtapose this to, or you could say gold. We could compare all
gold.
Three.
Let's go gold because it's been longer.
Let's do gold. The reason gold is money and the reason gold was money for 10,000 years is because the supply of gold only grows 1% to 2% every year, which is inflationary if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If the supply of something goes up, you know, over time, that's inflationary, period. And so the reason that a commodity-based currency seemingly didn't work is because we didn't want to work the system. Like the politicians and, you know, the globalists and the big business people that ultimately made the decision
to change from gold standard to the dollar standard
in 1913.
Right. Are you going to say they didn't want to go to the mountains and get it out of the...
Well, yeah. I mean, so yes. When you look at when you're on a fixed conversion, so our monetary system was on a fixed conversion. So a $20 bill equaled an ounce of gold. That was a fixed currency or a fixed exchange system.
Okay.
We had a commodity-backed currency. It was by design from our forefathers because every civilization in the history of the world has debased their currency. And so what does that mean? So Rome started on a gold standard and silver. And then as they conquered all these different lands and expanded, there wasn't enough gold to go around. So then they moved to the cheap metals, nickel, copper, tin, all that other stuff. And they debased the currency.
I'm tracking, by the way.
Okay.
Perfect. Pretty good.
So what leads to a country not being able to stay on the gold standard of 1% to 2% annual inflation?
Not enough supply.
Well, no, you have way more demand.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, you said it the right way, actually. Yeah, there's so much demand that there's not enough supply. Like, we can't just go get all this gold.
Right.
Well, what would that have been? World War. You know, World War I was 1917. Yeah. And so wars is a big reason why the gold standard didn't work, because we need all this money right now to go fight this war. Right. Well, we don't have it. Well, we need to borrow. And so that is really why in my opinion, the monetary system was changed from a commodity-based system to a debt-based system.
What would be the other argument to that?
Quickly. The counter argument is, and it's funny because I just was helping my kids with history, and I was kind of getting into this, and I was talking to my dad about it because he's, you know, he was in banking his entire life, and he's read a ton of history books. The counter argument to it is the old system was, it's clunky, right? It's slow. Like, gold is slow. Like, you don't want to walk around with $50,000 of gold coins in your pants. You know, it's just not efficient.
Well, I kind of want to, but yeah, I get it.
Maybe once or twice, but not every day. And so when you first had the formation of the United States, you know, in the 13 colonies, and even as we expanded into more states and different regions, well, there was lots of different currencies, local currencies almost. And so they were trying to unify the currency. And so there was a, you know, there was a spectrum of people that wanted, you know, one currency and kind of the Federal Reserve System, which is what they had in Britain, which is what our forefathers left. And they didn't want that in the United States. And so, and then the other side, you have a bunch of small communities doing their own thing. Well, that's really hard when you, you know, want to go to a different city. How do you exchange your currency? It was just clunky, right? And so the answer lies somewhere in the middle. And that's what our forefathers figured out. Hey, yeah, we're going to use a dollar and it's going to be backed by gold and silver. And you can do the paper thing. But if you want the physical commodity, you can get it back. Hmm. That was the hard conversion. And so that was their way of splitting, you know, the difference, so to speak.
Right.
So, you know, the counter argument is that a commodity-based system doesn't work for a rapidly expanding economy because there, you know, you need to borrow money.
You're kind of right. They're kind of right.
Right.
Okay.
For sure. If you want to grow quickly, you need a debt-based, in theory, you need a debt-based.
It's interesting because it's kind of like businesses too.
Right.
The people who want to grow fast probably going to have to go into debt.
Yeah. Or they got to go public and sell some equity.
Right.
So, you know, the thing is, I just looked again because I really rarely carry cash, but I have some cash in my wallet and I just took it out and looked. Every dollar, every US dollar that is created is debt. So the only way our economy can expand, if you think about it, is by increasing the money supply. Because we have interest to pay on that debt. So every dollar that gets created is debt. And so if that stops, the economy contracts, period. And when you look at a chart of the money supply and you put that up into the S&P 500, it is insane how correlated the two are. All of the contractions in the S&P 500 come during contractions in the money supply.
Interesting.
So,
which kind of makes sense for the record. There was some history that I did or some research I did for a newsletter that we did, and it was right before the election. And I wanted to know which president and their party did the market go higher. And it was fascinating to me that I thought it was going to be different than it was. Yeah. Well, it ended up being
the Democrats.
Democrats.
Right.
Because it seems like historically they're the ones who print more money.
They spend more money. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And that's where we're at now because of COVID. So fast forward to COVID, between what the government, you know, our politicians created with all these bills and all these acts and all the stimulus stuff that they did, which was several trillion dollars, and then the Federal Reserve expanding their balance sheet and printing more money. It was $8 trillion just in the United States alone. Mm-hmm. Now, when you factor in what China did, what Europe did, what Britain did,
right.
It's over like $12 trillion.
Different, yeah.
So you have $12 trillion sloshing around in a two-year period.
A lot of money. They're printing a lot of money.
Yeah. 40% of the money supply, like money in circulation now, was created in the last 2 years.
40% of all money ever?
In the United States. Yep.
Has been printed in the last 2 years. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I see where you're going with this. Keep going.
Do you think
keep
the saying cost your
words.
Of milk...
Keep saying your words.
Do you think the cost of milk or potatoes or steak or gas
are going to be affected?
Of Vladimir Putin going to war for 2 weeks with Ukraine?
Right.
Or is it because we increased the money supply by 50% in 18 to 24
months? I think we probably do need to say this, that we are shooting this podcast on March 18th. I think that's probably good in 2022, just so the listeners can kind of get a ballpark of where we're at. I don't know if it's going to air that soon because we're kind of backed up, but March 18th is when we shot this podcast. Right.
So inflation mainly comes from the oversupply of money.
Overprinted.
Yeah, it's all debt. And so now when you talk about interest rates, so the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 2 days ago, a quarter point.
So what does that make the interest rate now?
0.25%.
Okay. 0.25.
It was zero, basically.
Okay.
So now your bank account should be paying you 0.25%.
Do you think it will?
But no.
Good, no.
No.
And do you think you'll get taxed on that 0.25% if it does go?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, everyone, even the Fed is saying, well, we need to raise interest rates to slow down inflation. Inflation, I think, came in at, they reported at 7.9 for 2021. It was probably closer to 17. The main component of the inflation calculation by the U.S. government is rent and mortgage, or price of home, basically, or the expense of owning a home, is 40% of that calculation. That number for owning or renting was basically 17 and 19% inflation in 2021. They reported it as 4%. So 40% of the calculation was listed at 4% instead of 18%.
Mm-hmm.
So the number was basically cut in half of what it should have been. That puts inflation at 15% per year.
Mm.
That's staggering.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at then raising interest rates into a slowing economy with a potential war, not a good recipe to be raising rates.
Right. Not going to get reelected.
But
that's what we say
with
there.
The price of everything going higher, the Fed is in a really tough place. Really tough place. Because of all this money sloshing around. So it's like, what do you do? So they're going to try to slowly raise interest rates. What's the problem with that? We have over $30 trillion in national debt.
Right.
So it's not like the 70s where people say, oh, well, they'll just raise interest rates and cap. We didn't have that much national debt in the 70s relative to our GDP. Huh. Now our GDP is contracting because the baby boomer generation is slowing down and not spending as much money. And they're retiring. And now they're on fixed incomes. And so as our economy contracts, and because of all the stuff that happened during COVID.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
You know, I just saw a statistic that 100,000 restaurants closed in the last 2 years in just the U.S.
Right.
So you think about that economic contraction, rising interest rates, and then inflation, and then $30 trillion of national debt. Like, we're in a very precarious spot.
How do we get out?
Innovation. I mean, that's really where I think, you know, when you look at what brought us out of the 70s was technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 80s, we started getting, like, I remember you probably had one, a Sony Walkman.
Oh, yeah, Brian, I did.
And then we got the internet. You know, the internet was largely forged in the 70s and 80s and then commercialized in the 90s, you know, really when we all got the computer. But we just sat there and looked at it, tried to load a page, or we played a basic video game, whatever.
Word muncher.
But now,
word muncher.
We can't we can't even think about not using technology for a day. And there's like people that are like, oh, I'm going to take off from tech for a day or 7 days. It's like a thing now.
Right.
And I'm not discouraging that. I'm just saying, like, that's how far we've come. And so I do think Bitcoin cryptocurrency is going to revolutionize the entire financial world, like every transaction.
And how does that get us out of the conundrum we're in now?
Well, we're going to have growth. We're going to have new industries. We're going to have new jobs. You know, new specializations, new skills. And because it's money, you know, think about this: the stock market's only open 18% of the time.
Right.
Bitcoin's open 24/7, 365.
Yeah. It's
open
like
100% of the
time.
It's
like 4x. Yeah.
So you're going to have massive. You know, when you talk about the economy, you talk about printing money or government stimulus, you talk about the velocity of money, you know, and the trickle-down effect, which is a total hoax, by the way. If you're closer to where money is printed, do you want to be closer to where money is printed, or do you want to be like the trickle-down effect?
I'd like to be where the money is printed.
Yeah, I'd like to be where the money's printed too. I think we all would, and I think if you had the power to print money, you wouldn't want any competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think you're seeing a lot of politicians who have been, you know, bought by a lot of these big companies, you know, running a hard line against Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies because they don't want competition in how money is made.
Mm.
And so we do have innovation coming. with cryptocurrency. And I think we have, you know, technology that's going to change different things, even like engineering or how buildings are made. Now they're 3D printing buildings with like concrete 3D printers.
Cement, right?
Yeah. It's pretty cool to watch, actually. So innovation and technology has always brought us out of, you know, a recession, but then also pro-economic legislation, which, you know, largely I don't think we're seeing right now. And so I am super hopeful because I do think we have the technology and the resources as America. And when you see countries like China ban Bitcoin, what do you think the first thing we should do is?
Open it up.
Open it up.
Right.
And I think you're seeing that from El Salvador. You're seeing that Mexico is now rumored to be making Bitcoin legal tender. And I think if we made Bitcoin legal tender, it would be a huge boon for us economically and politically. So there's a lot of encouraging things happening. So, yeah, I think it's always, you know, you're a Batman guy.
Yes. Yes, I am.
It's always darkest before dawn. And it feels a little dark right now, you know, and I think that is when we know dawn is coming. There's another guy he talks about. I think we've talked about it before in a podcast, but this, like, we're in the fourth turning that, you know, the new saying, I've seen it a lot on social media, is, you know, like, hard times produce strong men. Strong men produce, like, basically comfortable lifestyle. Comfortable lifestyle produces weak men. Weak men produce hard times. And it's kind of like that.
Cyclical.
That cyclical.
Yeah.
And that's what this fourth turning in is, like, we're in a period of where things are getting shaken up and it's uncomfortable and it needs to happen and things are going to break and things are going to be reborn. And so that's hard to live through of financially of like, okay, what do I do? What moves do I need to be making? And you're seeing that from some of the people in Ukraine right now of like, they just legalized Bitcoin and cryptocurrency over there because it's the only way they can transact. You know, in a lot of cases, it's the only way they can send money in a lot of cases. And it's so fast and it's, you know, uncensorable. And so I think we're seeing the importance and the power of immutable money in Bitcoin and some of these other protocols and, you know, uncensorable money, which, you know, we saw in Canada. They're trying to shut down the truckers. Very peaceful protest, by the way, trying to shut down and take their money away from them to get them to stop protesting. I think these are very dangerous things. And when you're not on that side, it doesn't seem that big of a deal. But when you are on that side, it's a huge deal.
Right.
And who gets to make the rules when those things, you know, where the line is, so to speak. And so I think there's a lot to be said about what's happening right now. And then to segue a little bit, you know, businesses have gone through recessions. You know, you think about McDonald's. They've been through, you know,
a couple.
Couple of recessions, they're still standing, they're still paying dividends, they're still selling cheeseburgers. You can argue the health benefits of all that or whatever, but companies produce profits, produce jobs, and that, you know, stands the test of time. So when you look at the stock market, I think we have strong businesses that are operating in multinational places. There's a lot of growth and development. Stocks are super overvalued. You know, we've gotten this nice pullback. And so I think that is another area of where, you know, is another way to fight inflation is, you know, McDonald's wasn't charging $3 for a cheeseburger 50, 60 years ago, but businesses pass through the cost of inflation. And you can share in those profits, you know, by owning publicly traded companies. And so that is another way to hedge, you know, the inflation effect. We've talked about real estate. We've talked about owning a business, like personally owning a business.
Right.
And so I think it's a multi-pronged approach of, you know, hedging the inflation risk, the investment risk, the political risk, and, you know, having different assets that work for you all the time.
Right. I think that's good because at the end of the day, you just don't want to sit back and just sit on your hands and wait until it comes to you. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the Uncommon Wealth Partners has been such a beacon of hope for a lot of people. Is we've been telling people like, no, go pursue your passion. Go pursue it now. Don't just sit your money in the market and hope that it comes back to you three times as big as it did, and then you can figure out what you want to do. Let's figure out what you would want to do if money were no object.
Yeah.
And let's use your money to try to pursue that and get paid for doing it. It's a different kind of mindset. It's a totally different mental shift that I think has been very encouraging and motivating to people. And even now, it just seems like before this, you know, with the whole COVID situation, like people who thought they had amazing jobs that were super secure are not so secure now.
Yeah.
And then And honestly, like with everyone resigning, they're all trying to figure out like, but I wasn't happy there. Like I wasn't impacting people that I would like to. And so, man, it's been really good to be able to walk some of these people through like, hey, you do have a lot of money in these accounts. Let's be a good steward of it.
Yeah.
Let's put them in accounts that can grow and you can fight inflation and this, that, and the other, but it's real. You need to talk about it. And I mean, for these poor retirees that don't have that much money, I mean, it's got to be super scary.
Yeah.
When bread could go up to $14 a loaf. Now, you know, gas and stuff. And so it is scary for those kind of people. So what for would you say to those people who are, they probably aren't listening to our podcast for one, but if they were, what would you say?
Well, I think it's the importance of, you know, the importance of, you know, we added commodity exposure, more direct commodity exposure to, you know, our portfolios in Q4 of 2021. That obviously is played out well. And so it's, you know, obviously being invested in different things. I think it's also the importance of owning a little Bitcoin and owning it directly that you control. And, you know, having a hedge to essentially the change, potential change in currency. And then three of just, you know, not making decisions alone, you know, especially out of fear or emotion that aren't based, you know, on financial or economic principles. You know, we've seen people do some goofy things at, you know, more emotional states, and I don't know that that serves your long-term plan. And so I think, yeah, making decisions where you're getting help or getting a view on different things and making sure you're not like, oh, I'm going to put all my money into this.
This sounds
amazing
like
how many times we hear that actually.
I know. Yeah, you laugh about it, but this sounds like a good idea. Let's put it all in there. And we even had somebody interesting enough the other day say, well, why don't we just put all of our money in commodities right now? Well, what? Yeah. Like, that doesn't seem wise when you're thinking of like, well, what if the war is just like, and it's over?
You know,
and then oil and gas prices go straight back down to where they were.
Yeah. And so I think it's an importance of, you know, and I think the other thing that we've talked about is staying aggressive. And aggressive, I think, in an investing sense has a negative connotation to it. But, you know, the age-old, you know, financial acumen in our business is as you get older, you take less risk and you move more money to safety. Well, when interest rates are going up, that doesn't bode well for bonds. And so, you know, how are you going to navigate some of these things? It's actually probably staying invested with stocks. It's staying invested with a, you know, a Bitcoin exposure, commodity exposure. It's staying invested in things that can appreciate in price relative, you know, to inflation. And so, and yeah, and having just a financial plan of where your income is coming from and that type of thing. So
it's good. And I got to be honest with you, I was staying with you the whole time. I feel pretty good about that. So what other things can we talk through quickly for our listeners just to even give them hope or encouragement in this all too interesting world where they don't know what's happening?
Yeah, I think philosophically it's interesting because I think a lot of people are like intuitively people know like something's not right economically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just to know that we're philosophically aligned, you know, we're using data sources and people that have been right and are navigating these things. So I don't feel like we're going to be surprised. You know, I'm not saying like we're going to get it perfect or anything like that. But philosophically speaking, I think we're aligned with a lot of our clients and the way they're perceiving things, the way they're viewing things. And we're trying to keep a, you know, a step ahead. And then I think the other side of it too is just is taxes. It's apparent going through tax season this year with our clients that it's just like there's just more and more work to do on mitigating taxes. And the tax code and the way it's getting shaped up is getting more and more oppressive, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you combine that with inflation, it's a double whammy. You know, inflation is the silent killer. It's the silent, the ghost tax. You know, it is a tax on your future income. And, you know, that's why we wanted to do a show on it and address it and to know where it's coming from. Like, it is coming from the Federal Reserve. It is not coming from Putin.
Some war, overseas.
And the other thing that I would say that, you know, Europe is more exposed to this than we are is this whole alternative energy, this whole greenwashing of everything, this ESG, environmental, social, you know, responsible investing. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in some of that. you know, avoiding some of the sin stocks and that type of thing. But this is not working. This is not working at all. And there is no way that 100% of our power or energy need is going to come from green stuff, wind, solar, geothermal, all these things. I think that's great, but there is no way 100% of our power is coming from that in the next 5 or 10 years. It is like a 25 to 50 year transition. Mm-hmm. And it's being sold as like, oh, just do this and tomorrow, it's going to fix everything. And I mean, Germany's in that boat right now where they've decommissioned nuclear reactors. You know, they have these, you know, insane standards to meet from like percent of power coming from green sources. And they are basically beholden to Russia's oil right now. And they have really no other alternatives.
Whoa.
And so I think it's to be said that like we should be investing in oil and natural gas in the United States. We should be investing in oil and natural gas in Canada and potentially offshore. And these things have actually served us and our economy for over 100 years.
Very well.
Very well. And to be energy independent will actually allow us to transition more sustainably to right, alternative energy.
Right. You're not saying to never do that.
It's just we're going to do it in a different timeline. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff being said. Like there's a narrative out there that like, I mean, even in the sake of, in the space of this war, they're like wanting Putin to be environmentally conservative or something like, well, remember your green mandate, like while you're going to war and bombing some other country.
I don't think he cares.
Like, I'm just going to say it out loud. I think we're off the reservation a little bit.
Right.
And so anyways, that is also causing inflation because there has been a massive underinvestment in the United States over the last 10 years in oil and natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like everybody knows, we're getting some of this stuff from Russia and or other countries that we may not align with politically,
mm-hmm,
when we have plenty of it right here.
Right.
And so...
That's a good point. Okay. I feel like this is enough. I feel like I'm starting to glaze over. I'm not, but I feel like I'm starting.
You are glazing over.
Nah, yeah, a little bit. Okay. Thank you for listening. Brian, thanks for the commentary. Yeah. I think it was really good.
And if listeners have questions or they want to talk about this stuff, obviously you can reach out. But I think it's important to know... Some of the, you're not going to get the full story just listening to the news, I don't think.
What's behind it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's good.
So.
Okay. Again, if you have any questions, reach out to us on www.uncommonwealth.com. You've been listening to the Uncommon Life Project. I've been your host, Philip Ramsey.
And I am Brian Dewhurst.
Mainly Brian Dewhurst on this one. Till next time, go be uncommon. Thanks, have everybody. A great day.
Bye. That's all for this episode of the Uncommon Life Project. Brought to you by Uncommon Wealth Partners. Be sure to visit uncommonwealth.com to learn more about our services. Don't miss an episode as we introduce you to inspiring people who are actively pursuing an uncommon life.